Okay, so Sable, I'm gonna claim host.
Sorry, what was that, Miss Kyle?
I claimed host.
Okay.
Hi, it's Kathleen, our COG. Hi. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Afternoon.
Thanks for coming, logging in. Thanks for logging in, Lori.
Hi. Thanks.
I know you've had a very busy morning.
I am currently unwashed and still a bit damp. So this photo is a much better view of me right now.
Of the day all. Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Michael. We have a minute or so. Thinking a project we should get is a research grant to bring St. Patrick to Guam to get rid of our sins.
Here's Regent Diaz coming in. Hi, Regent Diaz. We have a few minutes and we need a few more people to log in, but they are scheduled to log in.
I like Lori's picture. Where is that, Lori? Divers want to know.
That is a late afternoon spawning aggregation, which doesn't really show, but it's Upper Harbor, from Gab Gab.
Yeah, right. Good. Cool.
Yeah. It's better than I actually look right now. I just got out of the water, so that's a much better photo.
Well, you do have one of the few marine labs that you can just walk out of your office and
yep.
Water. So, yeah.
We sure do. It's a special place.
Although it's often rough on that side. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was a little bouncy where we were today, too. But
where were you?
Well, we were at the nursery. And I do have to get you out there one of these days. We're kind of waiting for calm weather. It's been a little challenging recently.
Yeah, I think we all know why. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. But we're hoping for things to get a little calmer.
Right. Yep. Or we're going to have to change the name of our semesters. So. Because we were at about double the rain, both for the year so far and for the month, I was just noticing. So.
Yeah, it has not dried out yet, that's for sure. I mean, we're in a La Nina, we're pretty sure of that, but it's a very, very wet one.
Have you heard of the predictions that will go straight to El Nino, or can you have kind of an in-between where it's neither?
There should be years that are calmer and just aren't doing anything much, but it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. It's we are in the middle of very rapid change. So, yeah, I mean, I was in a committee meeting of someone who one of our students is planning to defend the semester and she originally thought that she was sampling during what we always consider dry and cool periods versus hot and rainy. And her data did not match at all what that was predicted. And we just had to say, okay, get rid of your thinking about seasonality during your year of thesis. Just look at rainfall. Just plot your rainfall. And don't worry about what seasons you think it used to be or it was supposed to be.
Right.
And hopefully things will match up better and it will be more publishable if she looks at it that way.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What looks like, are we at a quorum now? Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Okay. So I'm happy to call this meeting of the Research Corporation of the University of Guam Board of Directors meeting to order. And the first order of business is our meeting minutes from our regular meeting of December 2nd, 2022. Could I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Rachel. A second.
Second.
Thank you, Pete, I think. Any corrections to the minutes as written? Hearing none, then I'll call for a vote. All in favor of the minutes as written, please say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Abstentions, and those are accepted. Thank you very much. Now moving on to chair's remarks. Here I am at 3.0. I thought maybe we should just occasionally go around our little boxes and introduce ourselves and say how long we've been on the board, if you can remember that. So I'll start. I'm Tom Kreis, been on the boards just about 4.5, going on 5 years. How about Ryan? Since the boxes are in different order, I'll go in my own order.
How's it going? I've been here for about 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Michael's been with the RCOG for a while. We can go through everybody on the screen.
Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been here for almost 2 years now.
I got about 4 more months in the system.
Great. Thank you. And Pete?
Say at least a little over 2 years.
And you're a region as well. That's right. So, great. And Rachel?
I think I've been an official board member for maybe 6 months, but I've been an attender for several years.
And of course, Rachel's vice provost for research. And Anita?
Yes. Hoppity. Good afternoon, everyone. I've been on the board since I think we were first established. Yes.
So that's going, is that 9 years then, I think now? Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Whenever we got started, right. Thank you. And Anita, of course, is Senior Vice President and Provost. Danica?
Hello, everyone. I've been with RCOG for 3 years from now.
2 years. Great. Thank you. And Lori?
Sorry, computers. Hi, Lori Raimundo. I took over for John Jensen. And this is only my second meeting. So I just spend a lot of time listening, but thank you. Hi.
Glad to have you. Thank you, Lori. And why does Randy's box say my name on it, I wonder?
Oh, sorry. I'll fix that. I'm not you, but... Yeah. So I'm not sure if there were any meetings before I got here.
An original member. Thank you, Randy. Of course, Vice President for Administration Finance. Gloria? I'll make everybody say hi. Gloria's having difficulty, I think. How about Ricky?
I have a little technical difficulties, but I've been with RCOG since the beginning.
Great. Oh, there you are. great. Thank you. Original member. Yeah. Ricky, please.
Hey, Dr. Kreis and everyone. Apologies for my delay. I've been a
board member since inception. Dr. Underwood appointed me twice, and then Dr. Kreis is kind enough to appoint me again. So since 2014.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for doing that. How about Sable?
Hi, I've been with RCOG as a student in 2020, and now I'm full-time as of 2022 last year. So almost 3 years with RCOG.
Great. Thank you, Sable. And Tony Camacho. It's our legal counsel.
Hello. How are you doing?
You've been with RCOG advising the board for?
Since 2019.
19, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Thank you for that. And how about, thank you. And how about Rayanne?
Hi, I'm Rayanne Conception. I've been with RCOG since 2021 and with the university since 2016.
Great. Thank you very much, Rayanne. Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for your support. And of course, our executive director will have her own minute chance. So happy St. Patrick's Day. And I wanted to also point out that this is the deadline for the applications for my replacement as president. So I think we can expect, it looks like the timing is such that we might be able to make an announcement by May. So we look forward to that process. And thanks to the regents present for their involvement in that. And of course, congratulations to RCOG for just, you know, quarter after quarter of amazing results, and the executive director will be giving us some updates on that, but I just thought I would remark on the congratulations. We've been in the process of advocating for our budget this year, and the research achievements of the university are really one of the great highlights that we press on, but there's also this challenge in that all of this great news about the research grants and the work and the awards and so on clouds people's judgment, and they can't see that there are difficulties or that we still need our basic appropriation to pay the bills, to pay the utilities, and pay salaries and so on. So this is an influential group, and I just urge you during this period of the budget conversations in the legislature to use whatever influence you have, which I think is considerable, to help the legislators, particularly the senators, but also the public at large, to appreciate how much quality as well as treasure that this university brings to Guam, how much it adds to the economy, how much it's worth the investment, what value we bring to students and whole families, so just helping people to appreciate that by whatever means you have would be really important to us at this time. And one of the reasons we're pressing so hard on it this year particularly is because this is our accreditation year, so our full accreditation report is due at the end of June. And so this budget will be the one that the WASC accreditors are paying most attention to. And the decline in our support by 23% over the past 5 years, which is 35% in inflation adjusted terms, is not good news for the accreditation. So we need to turn the corner, and emphasizing the extraordinary work of all of the research activity of the university, particularly that supported by RCOG, is one of the things to emphasize for the value of this institution to our community. So thanks for advancing that by whatever means you have. Also, we were pleased to have Charter Day at the beginning of the month on March the 2nd. Great opportunity to highlight things that are going on campus, including quite a few of our researchers and research units had displays or tours and so on. So very well received, and a great chance to showcase the university. And I think we'll have Kathleen's report on the details, but I think you'll be very pleased with the both the number, 157 grants that we have, a tremendous total and tremendous amount of expenditure per year, and really, really great work coming out of all of that financing. So I think that concludes my chair's remarks, and we'll move on to the executive director's remarks, please.
All right. Here we go. So we have You know, we always track our key performance indicators, and then the final numbers are reported in the annual report, which is given to the board every December. And so as of this end of February, so we didn't even get to two quarters, but these are our expenditures. And so just February to this year compared to February last year, it's a 26% increase in the number of grant expenditures. And what's important about that is that when we get federal money, we want to spend it. We don't want to give it back to the federal government. So, you know, that's key because we keep having these quarter over quarter and year over year increases. So that's good news. And then the total IC, the indirect costs, have increased 55% February to February. So that's a significant jump that you can see there. So this trend is also looking good. And then if you take a look at the revenue we've pulled in, it's increased about 114% over the prior February, which is incredible. But our core expenditures have remained relatively flat. They increased about 9% over February of last year, which really underscores efficiency. But, you know, at one point, it becomes a massive amount of work for the same number of people. And that just can't be sustained over time. So we are hiring a part-time person for, it's two students. One will be coming on board at the end of the month to help out with the accounting team, and we'll have another coming on board to help out with the HR team. So in the number of employees, we have 136 employees now, part-time 95, for a total of 231. And then if you can see, took a look at the grants listing that I provided to all the board members, 157 grants, 28 million in annual budgets. These numbers are amazing. And the multi-year budgets now equate to $77 million. I mean, we just traditionally have not seen numbers like these. And this speaks to all of the work that all of the faculty and administrators are doing, frankly, people like Dr. Raimondo and Dr. Leanne Guerrero. I mean, they are really, they have full plates and full loads. They're administrators, but they're also heavily involved in research work. But so the negative impacts of this kind of growth is we're really outgrowing our space, right? And it has impacted our efficiency. You know, we used to brag that we would produce a PO in 24 to 48 hours, and we're hard pressed to do that now. It takes a week, sometimes longer. We've just got such a workload coming in. Our efficiency has suffered. So I always say, you know, we're our own worst. We're a victim of our own success. So beginning in April, we're going to raise the threshold of the grant amounts that we're going to accept. So we're not going to accept anything under $50,000. So all of those grants and all of those projects that are under $50,000 are going to the business office. And I think the business office can deal with that. They'll have to remind themselves. I mean, they do handle grants now, but we've taken the bulk of them. And so so all of these smaller grants are going to go back to the business office, because we just can't, with our space and the number of people, we just can't absorb anymore. So we have to give ourselves a break. And another thing I wanted to bring to the board's attention is, you know, there's a lot of discussion on the 22% raise for Government of Guam employees. And so if the university implements this pay increase across the board for employees, and not just classified, but others, then RCOG is going to follow suit. Some projects can absorb this. All the CSU grants, for example, under Dr. Leon Guerrero, they will be able to absorb that. Other grants are going to have a tougher time. And so what that will mean is that some employees that are full-time might go to part-time, or they end date might come earlier. So it is going to impact deliverables. So I really want to work closely with UOGHR and Anthony Camacho to see what kinds of options we have. It's my intent, or I seek to do this 22% across the board, because I think if only some projects get it and other projects don't, then we just set up ourselves for lawsuits and whatnot, and grievances and complaints. And so, you know, really, really trying to work that through. And I know that it's not official yet, but it seems to me that it's coming down the pike. You know, we'll see if it happens. But I just wanted to let everybody know that if UOG implements it, RCOG is going to mirror what UOG does. And because we are on the same pay plan right now, and it just makes it easier that way. And then some things that have been happening this week, and this is really driven by ORSP for Dr. Pam Peralta and Dr. Leanne Guerrero, but many of you on this call have met with the people from Pacific Northwest National Lab to kick off two projects that they have with the University of Guam and Guam. And just, they sent us this little flyer, and it really is, they have 5,700 scientists at PNNL. And their research development expenditures is $1.3 billion. So suddenly ours looks small, but for us it's big. And so, you know, this really underscores the importance of this partnership, and ORSP spent a lot of time on this. I'm just gonna remind everybody, this is the game-changing research because we will actually have research on campus and the instruments to do that research, to take a look at renewable energy and splitting hydrogen out of a water molecule. And so this is next level science, and really could change the way Guam lives and works. And so we had a big meeting today. And Dr. John Lintiaco and two students are going to be spending 10 weeks at the PNNL labs and learning how to do these experiments. We're going to purchase that same instrument, and it will come here to Guam, and then they will continue to do those experiments. And the next year and the following year, there'll be five more students each time. So we're really building that STEM pipeline. For something as, you know, leading edge as renewable energy. And the other one is the Water Power Technologies Office, and they're really excited about aquaculture, and they're really excited about ocean technology and the power of the ocean to create renewables. And so that also kicked off this week. And another group of people met on that. And I think before I described, here's Fleur Deliza de Peralta. She was a former Guam resident. She is employed at PNNL, and she has insomnia, so does a lot of work all the time. I mean, it's good for us. She just produces. It's really quite amazing. And it's good for Guam. And we took them around. Dr. Rachel, Dr. Pam, and I took the PNNL team around, met with the Lieutenant Governor to let him know what's going on and the bigger picture of these things, because they're also working with GPA on long duration energy storage. And so it's not just UOG, GCC is connected to this, and the development of a STEM workforce. And this all ties into the EBSCOR Science and Technology Economic Diversity Plan. And Dr. Anita, Dr. Kreis, Dr. Rachel and I are members of this committee. And so what we're doing with PNNL directly touches on STEM impact on sustainability and quality of life issues, because that has to deal with energy and affordable renewable energy, and building a STEM-related workforce in here. Here we go, infrastructure and STEM capacity building. So that this is really going to reach through a lot of different sectors on island as we really focus on STEM. We focus on other things too. I mean, the university does, but for these projects and with PNNL, it's STEM. We also awarded 5 travel awards, but I just don't have Solmar's picture here, to students we sent to the International English Honor Society Conference in Colorado. And then we sent 3 students to the International Conference on Business, Economics, and IT. And that was in Japan. So we're waiting for our miles to build up now. As far as the EDA projects are concerned, we are 100% design complete. We have gotten approvals on for the entire financial package so that we can go to bid. We're working on the multi-step bid now, and a lot of it's there for Anthony's review. And we just got the nursing subdivision map about 30 minutes ago. So that means we can, pardon me, hold on a second. And so, yay, we can move forward on these projects. So that's massive good news right there. And last but not least, and Bobby's not here on this call today, but this would have been her last meeting because Barbara Malarty, she is retiring in April, and she's so happy she's traveling around. That's what she's going to be doing. So she already retired from the University of Guam, and now she is retiring from the Research Corporation, and we will miss her greatly. And so we just want to recognize her contributions, which have been many and significant to the Research Corporation. So a round of applause for Bobby, because she's not here, but she is recognized. And that concludes my report with the whole core team right there on Charter Day. And that's it.
Great, thank you very much, Kathleen, and to the whole team for amazing. The numbers alone are amazing. Any questions or comments for Kathleen? I see the comments in the chat about the need for new space, and we are working on that. We have a review of the master plan, trying to figure out the way forward. But it's a problem. It's a good problem to have, but it is still a problem that we need to solve. So, other questions or comments for Kathleen?
Just want to thank the team for clarity on those presentations, because when it comes time to talk to senators, things like that really help out the visuals and showing the graphs and relationships between those details.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Ryan. Yeah. Great. Other questions, comments?
Yeah, Dr. Kreis, Mr. Chair, I just had a couple questions regarding the presentation. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Kathleen, for that. I wanted to know just a couple things. For the grants that are 50,000 or below, just wondering how many do we actually have? I guess what's the level of staff support needed for what we currently have?
Well, we still have some legacy grants, and some of them are very small. They're about $20,000, but these are for our longtime professors who were our early adopters for the Research Corporation. So Ross Miller, Aubrey Moore, and they brought us their small projects, and that was actually a very good testing ground for them. So we have promised them that we will continue to support their small projects until they retire. And then as the new faculty who take over their projects, will be working with the business office. We just have so many more large projects and more coming in. So they're grandfathered basically. Yeah, correct. That the small projects take up just as much time from an accounting perspective, as Gloria has told me over and over and over, because you constantly have to check the balance of everything, of all of the budget categories to see if you can approve an expenditure. Whereas you have larger grants, you know you have more money per budget category and you can approve expenditures. Mm-hmm. So it does take a lot of work. What would we I think probably we're in a within the next year, we'll probably build up to a 4-person HR office. If things keep going at this pace, right? And I remember thinking, oh, we hit $10 million in expenditures. Wow, that must be our cap. No, now we're at 20. This year we'll probably be 24 or 25. So, and then for the accounting team, we'll probably at least need, one more full-time. And so these two students that we're bringing on, we're hoping that we can pick them up when they graduate. Full time. And then by that time, that'll be too many people for this house for sure. So I think our top priorities, and for myself and for Dr. Rachel Leon Guerrero, who's got about 150 people in her house, to look at where we can shift around Dean's Circle. Can ORSP shift to one of these? It's a double house, two houses connected together that currently is under Cedars. RCOG can move to her house, and then Cedars can have this house, something like that. So we try and have a win-win situation. And I don't think we can function off campus. We just have too many daily interactions with all of the different units. So having, renting something off campus, I just don't see that would be feasible. I hope I answered your questions.
Can I follow up quickly with that, just on the same topic? So if there is a double house that would house ORSP, is there something similar for Research Corp?
Well, if ORSP moved to the double house, then we would move to ORSP's current house 7.
So which is larger, is it bigger? Ours. Oh, it's larger. Yeah. Okay.
It's larger.
Okay.
So, Dr. Rachel, how many people do you have in there? 14? 16?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have 11 full-time, and then we have 3 others that come in on a part-time basis.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we have 14 workstations.
Mm-hmm. 14 workstations. So we would fit in there, and that would meet our needs probably for the next year.
Okay. And is this something that could happen this year then? Or is this I know it's being talked about. Is there a plan for Cedars to move and do
this? Well, Cedars doesn't know about the plan.
Okay, I guess that would be my question.
Dr. Rachel and I have been talking about it. And I think the first thing we need to do is to have a conversation with the SBPP. That's step one. And so that'll be, we'll be calling your staff, Dr. Enriquez, to make an appointment on that issue. And then from there to work with the physical master plan update.
Great. Thank you, Kathleen. Other questions or comments for Kathleen?
Yeah, I just had one more, Dr. Kreis, and if you don't mind. Yeah, thanks, Kathleen, for that. Totally supportive of it. I just wanted to be aware of, just so that we are aware of what grants are out there that are under 50,000. The other one is regarding the 22%. So, I mean, for myself, totally supportive of it. I'm just wondering, and I've seen it in different agencies where they've, like here at the airport, we're comparing our different pay scale to the general pay plan to see how that affects us, because we don't get impacted by the 22% directly, but indirectly, some of those positions now will be paying higher than ours. So we have to adjust ours to a certain extent within the law. And so I'm wondering, have we done that with some of our like general pay plan positions to see how ours compares to theirs, for us to be aware of the just how that comparison looks like for similar positions like accountants and program coordinators and stuff like that?
Well, we are on the pay plan.
Okay.
Right. And so then most employees, not faculty, not administrators, but most other employees, and Randy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, are on the general pay plan as well. They're connected to it.
Yeah, so it's called the UGPP, the university general pay plan, but it just mirrors the general pay plan. So, we just, for the record, we got a call from Joseph Augustine's office this week, and they said they're not intending on funding an increase to the people on the UGPP, just the GPP. So we'll see what happens with that.
Okay, does RCOG employees include, are they under the UGPP?
So what we did is we mirrored the University of Guam. So the University of Guam mirrors the general pay plan, and then we mirrored them. So
okay,
it's our pay plan, but it's exactly the same as the University of Guam. So really, that's what I'm saying. If the University of Guam makes any kind of move, then we'll make a move. But we're not going to move independently of the University of Guam.
Okay, no, totally supportive of that. And I think UOG was included in the substitute bill that got voted down yesterday. So, and I think it didn't reference a specific pay plan. It was just a general appropriation to the other semi-autonomous agencies. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Ricky. Yeah, I guess we're a house of mirrors with all that. any other questions or comments for Kathleen? Okay, then we'll move on to the next order of business is item 4.2, resolution 23-01, relative to amending the nursing pay grade. Could I have a motion to accept this resolution? Adopt this resolution.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Second, please.
Second.
Great. Thank you very much. And now for discussion, Kathleen, could you narrate, please?
Yes. Who just seconded that?
That was Ricky.
Okay. Okay. So we were contacted by the School of Health a couple of months ago, and they said, what pay scale are you using? And why aren't you using the newly adopted, was adopted in 2021. So we were asleep at the wheel for a bit there. And so this is on some of the grants, they could be GWEP or other grants in the School of Health. So they hire part-time nurses to come in and perform various grant deliverables. And so because they are on that pay plan and we're bringing them in, we're going to pay them at the same rate. And so it was brought up to us by the School of Health. And we said, we took a look at the law and when that occurred. And so we would be moving from, nurses have their own grade. It's NM step one. Currently at 2105, and it's going to move up to 2662 per hour. And so then that is commensurate with the pay plan that nurses in general on Guam receive. There's not much more explanation than that.
Great, thank you. Other questions or comments for Kathleen or other comment on this? We'll move to a vote then. All in favor of adopting this resolution, please say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Then the resolution passes. Thank you very much. Moving on to action 4.3, resolution 23-02, relative to approving the no pets at work policy. Could I have a motion to adopt this resolution?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Randy. A second, please.
Second.
Thank you, Ryan. And Kathleen, would you like to narrate this, please?
Well, we've noticed recently that a lot of RCOG employees are bringing their dogs to work. And in fact, a single employee can have two or three dogs. And then suddenly they go off to a different meeting in a different house and have other employees babysit their dogs. And it seems to have blossomed this whole, it's okay for me to bring my dog to work. And so I was having a conversation and I looked out the window the other day and I saw this employee with a couple of her dogs and they're just relieving themselves right there on campus. And I thought, we need a don't bring your pets to work policy. So that's why we have them. It seems like no one wants to be the mean person who says, well, don't bring your dogs to work. It's not like that I dislike dogs. It's just that they don't belong in the workplace. And so what's next? Monitor lizards? And so we have some, exceptions, all right? If you actually have a service animal that is certified, or we have dogs that are trained and they're part of the invasive species detector dog pilot program, and they sniff out the coconut rhino beetle. And so those dogs sometimes are near a workspace or in a workspace, but they are handled by professional dog trainers. So that's different. And they don't bring them into the office. And it just seems to me that with COVID and everybody was working at home, and then as we opened up, often maybe you had just one person in the office at a time or a few, but now we've been back face-to-face for quite a while now. And people still want to bring their pets. So we need a policy.
Well, I just wonder, is it tight enough, especially when it relates to disability? Because lately I've been seeing people bring their pets on the plane, the dogs, and you can't see any, I mean, there's no visible disability, but they say, oh, you know, I've got anxiety. That's right. Why I've got to have my pet on my lap at my office. So I just wonder, is this based on an existing policy? Has it been vetted so that we can address that type of request?
It has to be
with me.
So you can't just say, I have anxiety, I have to bring my pet. You go through this very rigorous training and certification process in order to have that designation. And so if you have that designation, then, you know, there's an exception for you. Or if you're blind, you know, and you have a seeing eye dog, something like that. So, of course, that's rational. We'll make those exceptions. But for these folks, I think they just like their dogs. So does it need to be tighter? Could we have it, you know?
Does the university have a no pets at work policy?
I think I'll thank you for that question. I think I'll ask Tony to remark on anything he'd like to remark on.
Yeah, so it goes like this. We've had this issue before, but it comes up with students wanting to bring their dogs to class. And hang on, as you've been speaking, I've been furiously trying to find my previous work on this this issue. So, concerning certification, the ADA doesn't require service animals to be professionally trained. Further, just to warn you, there are many sites where you could get a certificate, so to speak, saying your animal is a service dog when it really isn't. Okay. So the fact that you're acquiring certification kind of runs afoul of the ADA requirement. Okay. The reason being is people with disabilities, this is the ADA, quote, have a right to train the dog themselves and are not required to use a professional service dog training program, end quote. Okay. So the certification requirement is one issue here. In terms of basically the handler, even under the ADA guidelines here, is the handler is responsible for caring and supervising the service animal. That includes toileting, feeding, grooming, veterinary care. We as the employer are not obligated to supervise or care for the service animal. And then let me see here. And then, hang on here. No. And then, can people bring more than one service animal into a public place? The ADA says generally yes. Okay. So some people with disabilities may use more than one service animal to perform different tasks. So now here's where here's kind of how we solved the last one. So they do require licensing. Okay. So the dog has to have a tag, like be fully licensed under Guam law. And we can say, hey, your dog's not licensed under Guam law. So, hey, you can't bring that dog here. That's kind of how we've dealt with some of these issues in the past. Further, if the dog is disruptive or if the dog is, soiling themselves in the area, we can ask that the dog be removed if, the dog's that disruptive. So that's kind of some general guidelines. And I can basically send this to Kathleen. Let's see here. Yeah. So in essence, further, the dog has to be fully vaccinated. Okay. Dogs have to be, once again, fully registered and licensed. Let me see what else is there. No, that's about it. So that's kind of some of the general guidelines that the ADA, as you can see, they're quite loose. Okay. That's what we've, like I said, had to deal with before. But the main thing that we got them on was the, hey, you're licensed, your dog doesn't have the licensing tag. You know, can you go get one? And essentially that kind of ended it because, you know, it costs money to keep the vaccination up, so on and so forth. Thank you.
So what I'm going to ask the board, though, to do is to pass this policy, and then whatever tweaks or things we need to change, then we can do it in June, which would be our next meeting, because I have one person bringing three dogs, and then other people are babysitting. And I, you know, the supervisors, if that were me, I would say, don't bring your dog. I had one meeting with a professor who brought in a dog that nibbled my toes and drooled on my pants. And then that just, that was the end of it for me with dogs in my office. So I don't want it to be a free for all. I really don't. It's too much already.
Yeah, I agree. And so when Kathleen was talking, she mentioned certification, but this policy doesn't require certification. It just says,
right,
if it's a service animal, then you can bring it, but mm-hmm. everything else you can't. So I don't think this is going to be an ADA problem. So yeah, I was going to suggest the same thing, that we can tweak as we study this and mm-hmm. And learn more about it. But yeah, and you know, I have four dogs at home, but I don't like dogs on campus, period. So I just feel like they don't belong here. So I definitely feel like they don't belong. You know, employees shouldn't be bringing them to the workplace.
Right. Yeah. So after reading this, I don't see certification, and the actual policy does cite the correct 28 CFR 36.104. Mm-hmm. And that is service animals, any dog that is individually trained. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it does track the statute or the regulatory language. Thank you.
Okay, great. So that means that then if somebody, an employee, really needs an ADA accommodation, then they're forced to do the work to try and get their dog all squared away to before they can bring it to the office. But in general, I don't think other employees should be babysitting other employees' dogs.
So. Yeah. And I mean, just going back to Anthony's point is that I think if it's a service animal, we just have to accept it. If they mm-hmm. if they claim it's a service animal, at least for now, I think we may need to just accept it, because I think his point was that ADA doesn't put mm-hmm. a burden on them to get certification or do paperwork. Mm-hmm. So.
So I can add the licensure language to the next iteration of this, but at least I think this will halt the, for the time being anyway, people bring their dogs to work with them.
Yep. And that way you can say the board is the mean people.
What we're here for. Other questions or comments on this subject, on this resolution? Sounds like we think that it passes legal muster as it is, but it might need some improvements. It does seem that requiring people who have permission to bring their animals to take care of them themselves is a reasonable, and not to expect others to care for them seems a reasonable aspect. Any other concerns or questions on this? So we'll call for a vote then. All in favor of adopting this resolution, please say aye.
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 All opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Thank you. Then this we adopt this. Sorry, I cannot get my screen to. My screen has frozen and I can't see the.
Can you see it on screen share?
Is this the next one? Okay.
Yes.
The next item is resolution 23-03 relative to amending the procurement policy to include a restriction on the purchase of used equipment or electronics to $1,000 or less. May I have a motion to adopt this resolution? Thank you. That was Pete, I think. And may I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ryan. So Kathleen, would you narrate this resolution?
We had some requests over the past year, and PIs wanted to buy used instruments, mainly microscopes, from eBay and other online platforms, right? So, and to the tune of maybe $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And we discussed this in the office and thought that you know, that's quite a significant investment in a piece of used equipment when there is no business to go to. We've got no warranty on the instrument. And so then we decided that we need this policy so that if there is something that a PI wants to get and it's a used instrument, if it's under $1,000, well, that's not going to break the bank. But we just felt like $4,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 was too much to spend on a used instrument.
Okay, thank you. Questions or comments for Kathleen on this resolution?
Kathleen, just a question. For those instances where it was over 1,000, did they exhaust their ability to find that specific equipment elsewhere?
No, because it was cheaper used, right? So they got a good price. And the PI seemed happy with that price. And, you know, maybe it is a good price, but if you think about other things, well, you know, where are you going to go for the warranty? What if it's defective? And are you going to, you can't, it's a piece of used equipment. So if everything works, wonderful. But if you receive that instrument and something's broken, who do you go to? So we don't have a policy that addresses this. And so we felt like we needed a policy that does address it. And so prevents expenditure of more than $1,000 on used equipment.
Does this include vehicles?
Well, vehicles, there already is something that we follow, and that you can buy a used vehicle, but it has to be purchased from a dealer, not an individual. So that's the rule that we follow, so that you are actually working with a dealer. And if something happens to that used car and they've said, okay, we've completely revamped it and it's in wonderful condition, you know, that there's some recourse for the research corporation.
Okay. Do you think it's worth it to allow for some process where a review of those things that are over that amount could be done by and approved by yourself? Or maybe if you wanted to bring it to the board, if there's some, because if they're only doing it because it's cheaper, then I totally understand why that shouldn't happen. But is there instances where it's probably the only piece of equipment that they could find based on the research? And I don't know, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I haven't run across where it's the only instrument that they could find. It just is a matter of price. But, you know, I'm going to ask Dr. Raimondo to weigh in here because she deals with a lot of instruments and microscopes and whatnot. And, you know, she really is in the trenches when it comes to that. And so if we can hear from her, I think that would be great. Dr.
And Raimondo. Rachel would like to comment too.
And Rachel too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see where there may be times when it would be useful to be able to buy a secondhand thing. I think the issues for me as someone who would purchase something like that would be, can you assure that it's in perfect condition? And what if you get it and there's something missing? And then you're caught up in this, I don't have something that works, and I have to return it, and it's all this trouble. So for me, that would be the main thing that would be the concern with something secondhand. If you're buying something large, I can't really imagine what sorts of equipment under $1,000 I would be purchasing secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that if it was worth buying something secondhand because the cost is so much less, then it's probably going to be something that's going to be a lot more than $1,000. So, and I think the concern would be the quality, and you know, how would you ensure that you're not wasting your money or buying something that's damaged?
Mm-hmm.
So, if there would be some way that some return policy or some warranty or something that could be provided to say this piece of equipment is useful and it's going to cost us a lot less, then I can see where it might be useful to be able to buy something secondhand if it can be certified in perfect condition or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be a good thing to have if it can mm-hmm. be provided.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel?
I was just going to add that, yeah, I mean, I it would be nice if there could be some type of ability to appeal, you know, on a case-by-case basis, because, you know, for the cancer grant, we just bought a FibroScan for Dr. Biggs's project. And the FibroScan, you know, it wasn't available here on Guam, and we needed to have the same piece of equipment that University of Hawaii Cancer Center had. The brand new FibroScan was over $120,000, but a refurbished FibroScan was like $26,000. And so we were able to get that and had it delivered to Guam and had it installed at MDX. So, you know, I can see where, yeah, you definitely want to see if there's you know, what kind of warranty, but in some case there needs to be some way to appeal and provide a good justification in a case on a case-by-case basis to, you know, to have exceptions to that.
Thank you, Rachel. Other questions? Or yes, Randy.
Yeah, so just the way I'm thinking about this, did I stay on? Oh, no. Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. I hit the wrong button on my computer. So is just the risk point of view that it sounds like what we're really talking about are eBay purchases, and, you know, there's enough shenanigans on there that you just can't spend a lot of money on eBay. And I feel like for the university, okay, if we're risking $1,000, we can handle that, and that's probably not going to cause too much of a stir. But if we if we have, you know, limited funds, limited grant funds, and we're spending $8,000 and it's a bad purchase and it we end up with a piece of equipment we can't use and we have no recourse, then we just can't allow ourselves to be in that situation. And so I agree with what everybody's saying that, like, if we have other recourse and maybe we should have a venue for exceptions, but I feel like this resolution is pretty close to what we need. I just feel like we can't be risking. That's why GovGuam procurement just presumes that you're going to be buying new because you want to get the best value for your dollar, and you don't want to take risks on unused equipment.
Yeah, well, I think with this policy, and like all other policies, you know, if you have something like, well, let's use Rachel's example, and it was refurbished by a authorized reseller or something like that. And then you could write a memo and say, these are the reasons why we want to make this purchase and justify it in that way. And I think if that justification is strong enough, then we could allow it. But I think in general, this just lets people know this policy is in place. So it's really up to the board. Should we take this back and work on it and present it next meeting?
I think I'd like that, because I do think I agree with Rachel. There are times when maybe certain pieces of equipment really, you can show the provenance and you can show the maintenance, whatever. And if there's a strong justification for buying it, then I think a justification should be provided. We shouldn't just let anybody buy anything, but mm-hmm. there may be cases when it would be really good to be able to buy something secondhand.
Okay, so then maybe we table this for now. Is that the appropriate decision to make? You think so? And then we can bring it back.
Can I ask too? I think Randy brings up a good point, because I mean, purchasing something used on an auction site, you know, there's different ways to buy it on auction. You can be putting a bid in, or you could be an actual purchase direct. But I mean, if it sounds like the auction site, auction related sites like eBay are where people are getting, or PIs are getting used equipment, obviously there's no recourse, or sometimes there's no recourse to ensure that those things can be returned. So, I mean, I guess if we are going to be looking at this, I mean, I think purchasing from authorized websites that are not auction based could be a consideration. Maybe we can have a restriction on purchase of used equipment and electronics over $1,000 from auction sites, or if you can kind of word it where mm-hmm. Is it returnable? Does it have certain features in terms of can I return this and so forth? Or if they buy it locally used, I don't know. You know, at least you can, you know, where who the person is, mm-hmm. because on eBay, you're not sure who the seller is sometimes. Mm-hmm. So those types of things, I think, are important to know. But I think potentially the blanket, just nothing under or nothing over 1,000 might close off, and not having an exceptions process might impact some grants. I don't know. It seems like there might be some instances where getting some used equipment is important, but it seems like the auction sites are the bigger issue.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan, for the example as well. Yeah.
Thanks so much. I do want to say something.
Yes, Stu.
I'm an experienced seller on sites like Reverb, and where I've had to get a business license for those things. And as a seller, when you establish your shop, I think it's a really good point that Artemio brings up, because if you're buying from a shop on that site, it's completely different from the auctions. And sellers know that the burden is way on the seller, especially when you're paying through means like a PayPal or something like that, they automatically the burden becomes on the seller to satisfy the customer. So I think this has started with good intention, good reason, but there's just a lot more things to research and think about in the articulation of this, and exceptions such as, you know, I'm coming from the perspective of a digital librarian where we're digitizing all these things. And one of the major ones we want to do is tackle the audio collections, digitizing all these archives. And if there are legacy materials in which a lot of those things, you just, there's no way to get it new at all, because legacy needs that, the means for an analog contraption that hooks to a digital to make it new again. I do see a lot of those purchases, if I was to get a grant, would be probably over the 1K mark. So maybe assessing what would those grants look like, imagining examples, and what is the cost of the gear, if we're gonna set like a hard line on where's the line on that. I think that would be a good place to start.
Okay, so I can work with Ryan Shook and Dr. Raimondo and Dr. Leon Guerrero and others, legal counsel, on this and see what we can come up with in the next iteration. But for now, we'll just table it. I think that's the best course of action.
So I think Tony might advise that we're withdrawing the motion, I think.
We're withdrawing. All right. We withdraw the motion. Okay.
Okay. I think that's
okay. That would be correct.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Kathleen, for taking care of that. And we'll move on to the last resolution, number 23-05, relative to approving investments in short-term certificates of deposit at insured financial institutions and investment firms. May I have a motion to approve this resolution?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Randy. And a second, please.
A second.
Thank you, Ricky. And Kathleen, could you narrate this one, please?
Okay, we actually, the board back in resolution 1804 already authorized us to invest in a series of laddered CDs, basically that, you know, 3, 6, 9 months. So they mature every 3 months. So we always had ready access to cash. But in that resolution, it said at the Bank of Guam, and the Bank of Guam has terrible rates. So now these rates are attractive. So we actually never moved since we were authorized to do that, because the interest rates were so low, it didn't really make a difference. And so now they are quite attractive. There might be 4%, 5%, depending on how long they're invested. And so we would like now to pursue that and invest some in some a laddered time certificate deposits. And we are thinking we have about 500,000 that we want to invest in this manner. And so we can do maybe not 3, but 6 months, 9 months, and 12 months. And then that way we can make a little money on our money, and that will help us when we contribute to paying for the Wary building. You know, we've got that $250,000 obligation, so we can make a little money on our money, but still have liquidity and some flexibility there. And so, and then this bill would authorize us to go to an insured bank, financial institution, or investment company, and who that has attractive rates for us, as long as they're laddered time certificate deposits and it's insured, especially given this most recent banking crisis.
Okay, thank you, Kathleen. So questions or comments for Kathleen or on this resolution?
Sorry for being talkative.
It's good, thank you.
I just wanted to make sure that when we say insured, we're talking about FDIC or NCUA.
Yes.
Okay. Can we be clear about that? Because I know investment firm could include other things that seem to be insured, but not insured by FDIC and NCUA.
Okay, I'll add that under the 1, 2, 3, 4th whereas.
So I think we'll have to do a motion to amend. Any other amendments to this proposed by anybody else? So shall we have Ricky, do you want to count that as a motion to amend it to specify the form of insurance?
Yes, just to amend the resolution to specifically identify financial institutions that are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, as well as the National Credit Union Administration.
Great. Second, thank you, Randy. Any comments on the amendment to the resolution? All those in favor of the amendment to the resolution, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Now we're back to the resolution as is. Any other comments or questions for the amended resolution? And all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. I think that concludes our agenda. And any final comments for the good of the order? Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you to everybody on the staff. Thanks to everyone on the board for your service and great comments and questions. And we'll work on all of these issues that we've come up with, and we'll keep moving forward. Congratulations to RCOG on incredible numbers and a very, very high level of service. So thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Absolutely.
Enjoy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Everybody. Bye.
All right, Sable, don't log off yet because I want to see what the amendment to bill is here. I'm pulling down something. Okay. I can't download it. So that's it. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.